Thanks, Mr. P, for the news. A little bit different everywhere here today. Hello once again, and welcome to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Samantha Simmons, in for Ray Graff. It's gardening today on the show, and we welcome back Bob Graves, who is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. We welcome your call, your gardening calls at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Fred, Greg, Bob, and Dale Isla, welcome back to Vox Pop. I got to start by asking, how are things growing this season?
They're growing very well at Landis Arboretum, I'll tell you that.
It's amazing to me how many things are in bloom all at the same time this year.
It is.
Wow.
Talk about flower power.
Wow.
I always like to sort of figure out, is it early or late? Is the forsythia coming in on time, or the magnolias, running a little early? And it was sort of working out for a minute there. Everything was right on time, and then last week it changed, and now everything is sort of getting jammed together.
I noticed that.
Everything went poof.
Yeah.
They really did. The magnolia. Poof. Magnolia bloomed this year. I don't know if you guys are seeing the same thing. Magnolia bloom.
Yes, gorgeous.
One of the better ones I've seen in many years.
The red bud started, and the crab apples all jumped right in. Usually they wait a little while.
And the ornamental pears are everywhere.
I was going to say it. One of the better pear blooms this year, too.
Everywhere.
Yeah, so no late frost. None of the buds got killed.
No.
So far, everything's coming in.
So far, it's going to be good for the orchard guys this year if it holds up.
Yeah, and the forecast the next 10 days, I don't see anything in sight, so knock on wood.
Yep.
Is this unusual that everything seems to be going well this early in the season?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
All at once.
Yeah, the thing that, being a fruit grower, I always worry, though, when everything is going well at this time of year, because people probably remember just 2 years ago on May 18th, everyone had a big freeze. And we were up all night long irrigating for frost protection on our blueberries. A lot of people lost a lot of their blueberries and other fruit crops. So I never rest until the first week of June.
I was going to say, until we hit
June. It's not over till it's over.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, because you think of the little petals on apples, for example. If those flowers, a frost would, any cold temperatures could easily damage those little petals. They're so fragile. And if you lose the flower, then you lose the fruit. So is it going to hurt the trees? No, but is it going to hurt fruit production? It certainly will. So right now, things are nice. Knock on wood, like you said, Delilah.
In terms of experiences the last few summers, we've had heavy rain. It makes it difficult to do anything. But has that been the case in terms of gardening and planting?
Every year is different, of course. Last year actually worked out really well. The rain was very consistent through July and into August. The real stress that occurred last year was that it didn't rain from about the middle of August till the middle of November.
It got really dry.
If you remember, a few fires were happening. We had one in Great Barrington. And that is my guess is that stress, that drought stress, is affecting in particular broadleaf evergreens, things like rhododendrons, boxwood, holly. We're seeing some stress from those, from that drought combined with the cold winter, which is normally a stress.
Yeah.
We'll know better in a few weeks when everything is finally out.
Yeah, the combination of the drought and the wind this past winter and heavy ice, because a lot of moisture did not go back into the ground, which might have if we had snow and snow melt, but it was ice. It didn't melt.
It really didn't melt much this year. No, it stayed pretty solid. Snowpack got at the Arboretum pretty much the entire
year.
Yeah,
we're still seeing the problems with rhodies and hollies.
And we are seeing a lot of rhododendron problems.
And the only thing you can really do is if it has some green to it, even if there's a lot of brown, this is on the foliage, is just to wait until the end of the month. The plants should bud out again. The brown leaves will eventually sort of be covered by some fresh leaves. They'll eventually drop to the ground. And if for some reason your plant is too far gone, you'll know then as well, because nothing will grow from there.
The other thing we're seeing is with the butterfly bush, they can die back to the ground, and this winter a lot of them did. And what we're telling people is wait, because sometimes they'll come up from the rootstock. Sure. Don't just wait. Give it a couple more weeks.
Yeah, they generally will, you know, sucker from the rootstock.
Sucker up.
Yeah, usually. And last year, they didn't even die back at all.
No.
I didn't even cut them back. That was the first year that I can remember not cutting back.
Well, the winter before this, where we are in Latham, we never got below 10 degrees. And this past winter, it was closer to 10 below.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and we were down at 20 below.
20 below.
So people with raspberries, that could be a problem this year, that there may be a lot of damage on raspberries or blackberries, depending on the blueberries, what varieties. Some that are not super hardy might have had a harder time this year, especially if people are in a colder location. But you'll know pretty soon.
Okay. I'm going to try my hand at taking a phone call here from Mike in Melville, who wants to know about lawn issues. So let's see. Mike, are you there? Maybe.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, nice good. How are you? Call. Yeah, no problem. All right. What is our lawn issues
I'm good.
Question?
Actually, I'm in Northville, New York.
Oh, okay. Northville. My grandma lives there. Nice.
Okay. My lawn, I have like 2 acres of lawn at my house. It's not, I like to call it my well-kept lawn / weeds. It's not a golf course by any means. Yeah, I can only really afford to spot seed where I have to do work or I get brown spots. But what I noticed last year, and it's really abundant this year, is there's like tufts of grass or like clumps, but they're not grass. They're like almost whitish right now. And they're, if you pull them out, the stems or the grass, the leaves, whatever you want to call it, they feel rough. And they're white. I noticed they're just kind of all over my lawn this year. And last year I started to notice it in the back and whatnot. So I'm just trying to, it doesn't look like crabgrass. It almost looks like straw. And I just don't exactly understand what it is. Any ideas?
Is it spots here and there all over the place?
Yes, it's spots here and there, but it's funny. If you like actually purposely tried to plant these in a row,
I lost them.
Oh, we might have lost them.
Well, one of the things I would think about is snow mold. We had a lot of snow mold last year. That's a disease that occurs on grass when the snow melts late or the ice melts late. And it would look like dead. It would look straw-like. It's not green.
I do have that also.
You have that also.
I was wondering what that is.
What I was considering is that maybe these are not grasses. Maybe these are some stray things that look like grass called sedge, and they are either still dormant and have not yet grown. So you're just seeing the tops from last year, and the new growth will come as we get into some warmer weather, or possibly they perished over the winter for whatever reason. But the former, I think more likely, if it is sedges, they're just going to sprout a little bit later. And they just were blending into your lawn, and so you didn't notice them most of the time. But because they're coming in late, you can see them now.
Yeah, and I also thought maybe they could be sedges. But, one way to ID them is that, sedges have edges.
Right.
So if you feel the sort of the blade on these, especially when they start to grow. So if this is the old one, you might not feel it quite so well. But if you see new growth coming from those plants, feel the edges. And they're almost kind of sharp, unlike a grass. It'll have a definite
edge. I think that might be it. Okay.
Yep. So it sounds like some type of sedge. And again, that's, your lawn philosophy it parallels with mine. As long as it's green, I don't really, we're not looking to have it all grass. Just healthy green, cover is what, what we try to do at the Arboretum. We're not looking to be
the
a
other
turf
thing
grass
that,
place.
I don't think this is an issue that you have, but people will start seeing tufts of what looks like grass going to seed. It'll be white, and it doesn't make any sense to you at this point. But that would be annual bluegrass, which is a grass that comes up in the spring. I don't think that's what you have, but you're going to start seeing that soon.
Yep, and if it was that, it would not have those edges. It wouldn't be sharp. It'd be more fluffy, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if it has the edges, what just combat it with a little bit more weed and feed and then just seed more of my lawn than I normally do, I guess. I also aerate it and I do a lot of stuff to it, but I can't water it. I have a well, so it's not, it's, it's hard to deal with. You know what I'm saying?
In my opinion, we, you know, at least at the arboretum, if sedges come in, we just mow it like grass, and we tend to mow everything on the higher side. That, you know, it basically doesn't stress the turf out much. It actually helps the roots and you know, grow good, and you're leaving more photosynthetic material on, so it actually, during those droughts, you're going to have, you know, you see a lot of these lawns turn brown really fast. The ones that mow it really low are going to turn brown way quicker than the ones that leave it a little bit taller. So, you know, we tend to mow a little bit higher.
And you could
I have converted.
You could consider, I mean, making the lawn, you know, a little smaller and working on a smaller area and letting the sort of back 40 come up and, you know, just be tall. You could probably get some meadow flowers in there. Probably look kind of fun.
Yeah, I tell you, I've toyed with it. It's hard to make that transition in your mind because at first, I think it would look like really like crap at first, and then I think a year later it would look good. So it's like, it's hard to transition that in your mind when you're used to looking out in your backyard and seeing what, you know, looks like a kind of nicely maintained lawn. So
yeah, just a thought.
I might toy with that. But.
Yeah. Right.
Okay,
thanks for calling, Mike.
I think I'll just handle this just like you said.
Awesome. Thank you. We're going to take a break. Vox Pop will be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Today we're talking about gardening. I wanted to talk about farmers markets and the return of outdoor farmers markets as it gets a little bit warmer. So, Delilah, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so a lot of the farmers markets throughout the area, this is their first weekend back. Some might wait one more week before they move back outside. Some don't open until Mother's Day. But we're at the Troy Market, and we're excited to move outside this weekend. We've got a lot of beautiful potted herbs. A lot of people have lots of fresh greens and beautiful lettuce. We'll be taking baby greens and some beautiful lettuce and a huge selection of fresh potted herbs as well. And looking forward to everyone coming out. And don't let the weather forecast scare you away. It's not supposed to get too rainy till the afternoon. So be there bright and early when everyone has a great full booth, and come see what all the local farmers in the area have to offer.
So at the farmers market, there's, of course, you know, a lot of food booths and also, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and other greenery. What do you think people are mostly looking for when they're coming to you?
Well, for us, being a produce person at the market, you know, at the Troy Market, there's over 100 vendors. And so there's a lot of vendors other than just produce vendors. But for us, we have a wonderful selection of potted herbs at this time of year. We've got parsley, we've got sage, we've got basil that's ready to harvest right now, Greek oregano, lavender, dill. I'll probably actually take a few tomato plants this weekend because people that are in warmer areas always like to get the widest selection. And we take about 25 different types of tomatoes over the season. Lots of fresh lettuce, and what's better than a fresh salad at this time of year? So people like us have been growing greens in their tunnels. There are unheated greenhouses much of the winter, but now is the time of year where everything is just bursting forth. And I think the greens taste fresher and lighter. It's just kind of like everyone, we all feel lighter and happier because it's spring and it's not February anymore, even though some of us that are skiers like February.
I've got a lot of emails piling up, so let's go to a couple of those. So this one is from DJ in the Hudson Valley, who says, I'm hoping you can give me some advice about planting ferns. I've transplanted ones that have sprung up in my garden, then they always die. I'm considering getting some from my local gardening center. What steps should I take to help them thrive? That's from DJ in the Hudson Valley.
Well, ferns usually do best in a, you know, shaded or partly shaded area. And the soil doesn't have to be super moist, but you want to amend it or make sure that there's a lot of organic matter in there. They're just going to do much better as a transplant. I would think that if you were in your yard, though, or in your woods and you saw some Christmas fern, some ostrich fern, even some cinnamon fern right now, they're all sort of obvious and up pretty strong, that you could gently dig around, creating a little root ball, a little clump, and move those successfully.
Yeah, ostrich fern's another good one, too.
Yeah. If for some reason you want to go shopping for ferns, they are becoming available in most garden centers. It usually is a plant that is a little delayed for spring. So maybe mid-May is an ideal time to start shopping for ferns.
I'm going to do another email here. This is from Nick, and forgive me if I can't pronounce this correctly. I always knew that you could eat nettles.
Yep, for sure.
Awesome, let's go. And just tried for the first time, delicious sautéed with some garlic and turnips. If you grab them with authority and squeeze hard, they don't sting. Otherwise, any glove works. What do we do about the teeny spongy moth's caterpillar? That's from Nick.
So generally, I don't see a lot of moths or caterpillars on nettle. If they're on the nettle, I would pick around them. I'm a forager, so you know I absolutely love nettle. Stinging nettle is if you like spinach, you're definitely going to love stinging nettle. And as soon as you put them in water, hot water, the stingers are completely gone, so you can just eat these. And although the entire plant is actually quite good and edible, the part that I like the best, and I think it's also the healthiest, is those nice spring tips. You just go around and take the tips, and you can have a whole basket of them, and they're really quite good. So if I saw, I'm assuming they were talking about the moths on the nettle.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Well, because spongy moth is more of a woody plant.
Yeah, was it two questions?
Or was it two questions?
Yeah. Right. I mean, spongy moths were, the last I heard, were headed south. That Millerton, Ankrum, and south was where they were heaviest last year in terms of our, you know, from southern Berkshire County territory. They had passed through our place a few years ago and had been moving that way. I don't know if they were also moving west or north.
I know that we had, a few years ago, it was really bad. And then it's been
seen
less.
Much lately.
Yeah, and I saw right also a lot here. Less egg masses on a lot of oaks at the Arboretum. So I tend to think this year it won't be as bad, at least around here. And that's usually the way it is. They're cyclic.
They are cyclic.
Yep. Yeah, a few years real bad.
Yeah, 3 years, and they've moved on, and hopefully we won't see them again for another 10.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this year, I don't think, or at least around here, it'll be as bad.
If people have had them in the past, though, they could look for egg masses, or they could soon start to look for the little tiny caterpillars that come out. Yep. If there's not very many, it's easy to hand pick them off, put them in a bucket of water. If you do have a big infestation, you can spray an organically approved pesticide called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT for short. And also, rainy weather, there's a natural fungus out there that will often take care of them. So if we have a rainy spring, it often nature takes care of them all on her own.
Yep.
And then tent caterpillar has begun to emerge.
I have seen that around
and
here.
And that is sometimes maybe confused with spongy moth. And so that is even easier to get if you're still, they're just emerging. There's a web or a little sort of web mass caught in a tree somewhere, and you can just remove that, put on a glove if that makes you feel better, and just pull it away, and there'll be, a couple hundred little tiny caterpillars in there, and you can just...
They're almost always in the crotch
of the
plant, particularly in fruit trees.
Particularly fruit trees.
Yeah. Yep. You don't have to burn them. You can just throw them on the ground and step on them.
Yep. And that really is. And the thing is, if you leave them on, they're not really going to hurt you. They're not going to do enough damage to hurt the plants.
Yeah, so they chew them up more, a little bit, but little it's not bit. A big deal.
It's almost more aesthetics than anything else. But if we do see them at the arb, and we will pull them. If they're out in the wilds in the woods, we'll in a wild apple, we leave them alone. But if they're like in the parking lot area, you see a lot of it, we will remove some, but not something to really worry about.
All right, let's get to one more email and then we'll take a call. This is from Tim in Poughkeepsie, who says, we have a large area of mugwort. How can we get rid of it? Is there another ground cover that can overtake mugwort? What is mugwort, by the way?
Mugwort is Artemisia. It's a little, it's a little sort of green, weedy plant that does flower if you let it, and it's very aggressive in terms of its root spreading. It just takes over, and I would say that certainly you can look at herbicides and look for lists, but the best way to get rid of it in a garden is to weed it, is to, spading forks are those those pitchforks that have like big thick tines, and they usually come with a short handle, and they're a really great way to go at something that has a lot of root mass.
Yep.
You just loosen up the soil with it. You're going down 8 or 10 inches with the fork. You break it all up, and you just start pulling all of the pieces that are there. And as Fred would always say, a week later, you go back and start finding those few little pieces that you may have missed. And if you do that 2 or 3 times, by the middle of June, you should have the mugwort under control.
Yep. It does take a follow-up, because it's always going to be something you missed. It wants to resprout. So, you know, persistence pays off in this case. Go back and get it. And if you see a little bit more, get it. And then like you say by July.
And until you've really gotten rid of it, I wouldn't suggest trying to plant something that would compete with it, unless it was like a large shrub. I guess you could consider that.
You could do something
that,
like
but
that.
But even that doesn't usually work out too well.
Right.
All right. Let's go to John and Rhinebeck. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Thank you for taking
my
call.
Thank you for waiting so long. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. Enjoying the program. Thank you.
His redbud tree is not blossoming. How can we help this man?
Yep. So do you see any buds forming on that redbud now? Like any?
Yes, I do, sir. They're not blooming, but you can visually see the buds.
The little red, they're like red now, right? Like reddish color?
Reddish brown.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's going to be the flowers that are coming. It's probably, I'm assuming this one's just a little delayed. Ours at the Arboretum are just starting to come. I mean, they haven't even opened yet. They're just starting to swell.
The flower buds are little bumps that are a dark kind of maroon color, and they're just sitting on the wood. So if you see those, if you want to go over and pick one and see if it's green in there, then they're all going to come open and open. If if they kind of pop off and they're brown, there may have been some winter damage.
Yep.
You can always, if you're unsure with the tree whether or not it's still alive, is to scratch the bark itself. And if it's green underneath, just wait. If it's not green, then that's an issue. But scratching the bark sometimes will tell you whether the tree is healthy or not.
Yeah, and when Bob says scratch the bark, we're talking about the branch ends, the skinny branches, not the main trunk section, but the actual edges. Where all those little small branches are. You just use your fingernail. A little scratch. If it's green, you're in good shape. If those buds, when you pull them off, there's some green, it looks like alive. They're on their way. If they're brown when you do that, that's very much it could be winter injury.
And it's also possible that you're looking at leaf buds, that there may not be any flower buds this year, that it's cycling and at a lower flower bud year. So you may just get leaves. And if you do just get leaves, that's okay. It will probably set up nice flowers for next year.
Yeah, they are a little sensitive to cold.
They are.
Yes. We're a little bit north of their preferred territory.
Yeah. Correct.
This is very encouraging, and I'm actually here taking notes as we're speaking. I really appreciate the information and clarity because, yes, I would have scratched the bark, not the branches. But I do have a close friend, and he said offered the suggestion that you just clarified for me, which was, take a pocket knife and just scratch a little bit of one of the edge of the branches. I did do that, and I have to say it wasn't green. It seemed sort of brittle and just woody.
All right, so then that could be some winter injury. And generally, if you do cut it with a pocket knife, you might actually go right through the green into the heartwood brown. So we're talking about, like, your fingernail would easily peel this like skin off. Just make sure you're not cutting too far and through the green. So a fingernail would be, my recommendation. And if you do see it brown, then you're going to wait. We're just going to wait for leaves to come. We're going to see what part of that tree is alive and what part of it's dead. And then once we know that, if that's the case, we go back and we prune off the dead, leaving the live. And in a lot of cases, you could train a new tree and try to help, form a new crown on that tree, depending on how bad it is, with a little bit of pruning follow-up. So at this point, if it's brown, I would say wait until, at least until I had a chance to fully leaf out. You're going to see what's alive and what's not if it's winter damaged.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sean.
Helpful. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks again for taking my call.
Good
afternoon, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Okay, let's go to Dave and Clarence, who says the strawberries are out of control. That doesn't sound like much of a problem to me, but we'll see. Dave, are you there?
Hi, Samantha.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So hi. Nice
job. What's going
on
with your strawberries? Oh, thanks.
So you you got my email, I assume.
Maybe.
Strawberry Fields Forever.
I might. It's probably somewhere in this
box. Well, I sent it to Vox Pop just before your show.
Okay.
So anyway, it sounds like your experts are remote today, so I don't know if that's going to help.
No, they're
no,
here.
We're in
they're
the studio.
All in here with me.
You are?
Yeah.
Amazing.
We are.
Awesome. So we put in a pond 5 years ago, and a lovely woman that we know landscaped everything with these blooms that come in, you know, in perfect time sequence. There's always something blooming around the pond, and I love it. But amongst the things that I assume are bulbs, because they come back every year, the strawberry vines that used to hang out, you know, over by the fence, minding their own business, have suddenly raced across the yard and up through where we have some variegated shrubs or variegated semi-annual things, whatever, and has taken over as almost a ground cover beneath where these tulip and snapdragon type things are. And they're crawling into the filter box. They're crawling into the waterfall. And they're just absolutely taking over everything. And when I try to weed them out, I just get a fistful of roots and they're still everywhere somehow. I mean, I've got square, multiple square yards of these wild strawberries, and I don't know how to get rid of them.
So I was going to say,
am I supposed to use a mulch? Am I supposed to mulch this thing?
So with the wild strawberries, at first I thought, well, you know, Strawberry Fields Forever is pretty good, but wild strawberries, if I've seen them spread similar to what you're describing because of birds. So the birds are probably helping move those through your planting for you. And if you have areas that, you know, there's a large area that you don't have something specific planted in that area, I would use some ground cover to smother them. That works really well. Get some black weed mat or black plastic or some type of black ground cover. Cover that area for about a month, and at this time of year is perfect because they're trying to put out all their new growth, and about a month of having it covered, and that should take care of a good number of them. What it's not going to do is prevent reinfestation if birds are spreading these strawberry seeds around your area. So, and you're sure they're strawberries versus like potentilla?
Yeah. Well, they look... The leaf, they're a jagged, small, jagged green leaf. They look just like where I know that we have strawberries. And that other area, the fruits, they're weak. They're very weak fruit.
Okay.
But they're definitely strawberries.
And okay. They're white blossoms.
I haven't seen any blossoms yet.
Okay. Yeah, so I would go the smothering route.
And could I add, you had this really nice garden installed, and it does take maintenance. That you know you do want to weed those areas so that the plants that were put in, you know, can thrive and not have too much competition. And so once you get the garden back in shape, or maybe you want to consider calling in the person who installed it and asking them to do some maintenance for you. It definitely mm-hmm. is going to need at least annual maintenance. Something should be happening. You know, mulches are helpful in that situation to slow things down. But you will have to, of course, get the strawberries out of there first.
Yeah. Well, as you can see from the photo, probably that these flowers have begun to sprout their leaves, you know, their leaf blades.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how to get a ground cover on top of it.
Yeah, I think you need a consultation, and if that person is available, that might be a good way to start.
Yep, just to get kind of reset, figure out what's going on, and then, you know, move forward from there. But it sounds like, you know, things are growing good. You just got to get these strawberries under control.
And, a lot of times when we put in a beautiful garden bed and it looks fantastic, we don't realize what's going to happen in subsequent years.
Yeah.
I'm ending up ripping a lot of them out because it's just so much work to keep the weeds, particularly because of the birds. There are so many things that they spread now. I'm not against birds, but there's an awful lot of weeds spread by the birds.
Yeah, part of our blueberry planting is actually for until I started using weed mat in between the rows, it was a solid wild strawberries in between our blueberries on half an acre because the birds sit on the wires of our support structure and poop out strawberry seeds. So they can spread quite happily that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just hoping that they don't choke out the other things, but I appreciate your help very much. And my little pin cherry that we talked about last year is got some wonderful leaves coming out on top. So I think I've got one more summer at least with this pin cherry.
Great. Good news.
Dave, thanks. We've got to take a break, but Vox Pop will be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Today we're talking about gardening, and I'd like to kick off this portion with a really dumb question. What do you guys think of aqua globes? Do you remember those? They were like on like the commercials when I was a kid, at least, and you fill it up with water and stick it in your plant, and it like waters it without you having to remember it.
We still use those.
Yeah? Those are like good? They're not like a gimmick?
Well, for a plant that uses a lot of water, if you're not going to be there, you know, it doesn't last a long time. But if you're going away for a week and you've got a plant that, you know, needs some water, and there's other types of things that do that. There's ones you can attach to a soda bottle. It's a good way to...
Yeah. If you're going to leave your plants for, you know, a week, or if you're going to be there only on the weekends, it's never a bad idea to get some kind of system down, and those can be very helpful.
Yeah, and one thing that a lot of times people do is they, when they water, you really want to do... thorough watering, where it comes right out the bottom of the plant. If it's a pot, you know, potted plant, and if it's a tree, you want to saturate the root zone. And a lot of times, people frequently water light, so those types of aqua globes and other products like that let it out real slow, and it helps to get deeper root penetration. And you know, a bigger version of that is almost like a tree gator, where they put it around tree trunks, and you can drop in 5 gallons of water, and it puts it down over the course of a day.
Some of the things that we'll do with a tree outside, if they don't have a tree gator, and people can look up what that is you take a bunch of plastic milk cartons,
right, or 5 gallon
put holes in the bottom of them, and stick them next to the plant, and it leaks out slowly. It's a great way to water.
It is, because you just don't have the time to sit there. If you try to drop 5 gallons on a tree in 5 minutes, most of it's running away.
Most of the time, if somebody tells me they're watering a plant by holding a hose on it, I say you're doing it wrong.
Usually.
You can't get enough water on a tree or a shrub by holding a hose.
Unless you're retired and you have a lot more time.
More and more of us are not retiring.
Right, but otherwise, most of us, it's just not going to get the water down deep enough. So, not necessarily a gimmick. I think it has validity.
You can give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. We've got some people on the line that have been waiting a little bit. So let's go to Chris in Housatonic, who wants to know if you can grow papaya or passion fruit here. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello. So you want to grow papaya and or passion fruit in New England?
Yeah, I got another question for you, too. Okay. I was saying... the lady from gardening saying she has fresh herbs. Can you get fresh green tea leaves anywhere?
I am not familiar with anyone having fresh tea leaves
area. We often have a coffee tree. So, you know, coffee is something that you could grow in your house and then maybe pick enough beans to make a cup. But I have never and olives. We can grow an olive tree, and there are some persimmons we can grow outside, but tea. What were the other two? Passion fruit
papaya.
Those are pretty tricky.
Those are tropical.
Without a big greenhouse.
You know, a lot of tropical plants that grow outside, they grow in the south, they grow outside, just like our apple trees. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't grow an apple tree inside. And you got to have so much light that it's very difficult to get any fruit from something like that.
Yep. A lot of our indoor plants that we have around here are actually outdoor plants,
outdoor
like trees.
Plants down south.
Yeah, right. A jade plant around here grows like a weed outside in California.
Great.
Right.
All right. Chris, thank you so much. I don't know if he's still there. Okay.
Yep.
We'll move on. So this email came in pretty early. I'm so sorry that it waited all day, but it says, hello, I'm in a bit of a panic. I potted up my dahlia tubers and they took off. Do you think it's safe to put them out now? If I can't put them out now, should I cut off the growth and hope it comes back? That's from Ann and Adams.
Well, I think the first answer is yes, for sure. You know, dahlias are pretty tolerant of cooler weather, and getting them out in this next 10 days where it's fairly moderate, it's like we're not going to see anything extreme, would be perfect to sort of harden them off. I would say that if that's able to happen, that you probably could go ahead and put them in by the 15th or 20th. We were talking maybe under before the we came on about how it got really cold a few years ago, so you still would want to watch the weather and throw a sheet over them or something if we did see a freeze. But dahlias are perfect to get outside right now.
Yep, and definitely don't cut off any of the new growth, because that's right. All energy that was used up from the bulb, so that's going to, or the corm, so that's going to end up, you know, setting your plant back, if not worse. So that you don't want to do, and otherwise I think plant them.
Yeah, or if you're worried, if you're in an area that it's colder and you think you might get a freeze in a couple of weeks, keep them in the pot, but have them outside during the day and just wait to transplant them a little bit later.
All right. Thank you. That was from Ann. We're going to go to the phone now. This person's been waiting well over a half an hour. This is Janet in Monticello. Janet, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, how are you? What's your question?
Hi, good, thank you. I bought hyacinths in pots for Easter. The blooms are finished, but the leaves are still green. And I was just wondering, is it too soon to plant them outside now, or will they rot? That's kind of what I'm afraid of. And do they need to be dried first?
Nope. Put them in the ground.
Yep.
Yeah. Plant them.
So those leaves are green, and you want to keep them green as long as they want to be green. So plant them. Make sure that you put about 3 or 4 inches of soil over the top of the bulb where the green is coming out, and that means you're going to be burying some of the green that you see now, and then just leave them out there until they yellow, and you'll see them next year for sure.
That's the trick with all of the fall bulbs that you get at Easter. Any tulips, hyacinths, crocus, daffodil, if you got it as a gift and you'd like to plant it, you can certainly do it now, but do not cut off the leaves.
Right. Wait till it turns completely yellow and, you know, dies right back. Because you want that energy to go back down into the bulb.
Okay. Should I use bulb booster with those?
Oh, sure. That'd be great.
Yep. Yeah, any fertilizer would be great. Bulb booster is excellent.
Okay. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Janet.
Uh-huh. Bye.
I have neglected to ask about these beautiful plants sitting in front of me for 48 minutes now. So what is sitting in front of me? It all smells so good.
So these are some of the herbs that we will be taking to the market on Saturday. Some are annual herbs like the parsley and the basil that you would want to just use them this year. And both of these are harvestable size. And then you can smell this and tell me what you think of it. It's kind of a elongate leaf.
Oh, that smells. It smells like any soap shop that you walk into that's like a small business, if that makes sense.
It really does.
Right. My husband says it smells like his grandmother.
Yeah, that would make sense. What is it?
So it's lavender.
Oh. Yeah. This is lavender?
Yes, wow. That is lavender before it starts to flower.
What a great smell.
So they will be putting out flowers and probably start flowering in a couple weeks. Greek oregano, fresh, ready to go to put on pizza.
Is there a difference between oreganos? I assume.
There are. Some are more culinary, have a stronger flavor for culinary use. The Greek oregano is usually considered to be better for cooking than the Italian oregano, which is opposite of what I would have thought, but that's what I have heard. There is some nice fresh sage, and sage is a perennial. So we planted one sage plant like this that's in a 4-inch pot several years ago, and now our sage plant is about 3 feet wide by 3 feet tall.
Wow.
So if you like to make a lot of sage stuffing, it's always nice. The next one I have here is a subject for debate. supposedly, it's orange mint. It looks a lot like a sage. And Greg thinks that maybe it was mislabeled and that it's a tricolor sage. I smell a tiny little bit of orange, but not as much orange as I thought an orange mint would have. So I'm going to take a photo that I'm going to send to the plug supplier that I got these from and say, did we get the right stuff?
There we go.
And then parsley, which is ready to go to be used for tabbouleh or any other type of salad. And we also have fresh dill. In a couple weeks, we'll have some rosemary and a few other types of perennials. And it's the time to start eating fresh salads with fresh herbs added.
Now, we caution folks right now about basil, planting that out. It is, generally, I've heard that if it gets below 50 degrees, basil is not happy.
Yeah, my dad usually wouldn't put it out till like Memorial Day.
Yeah, exactly. And the basil that we have here, I tell people to start harvesting it. You should always harvest basil from the top down so that it puts out side shoots from the bottom. A lot of people that buy from us at this time of year are using it in their kitchens on the day that they're buying it and leaving it on in a window for a couple weeks.
And then putting it out when it warms up.
Right, exactly. Pitch it back on top.
They really don't like it cold.
Yeah, and I have seen basil, it doesn't even need a frost to turn black. I've seen basil turn black if it goes below 40 degrees at night. So I tell people to never plant it outside till the nights are staying above 50 degrees.
Right, but all those other herbs you mentioned could go out right now.
Absolutely.
And would certainly take a frost.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep. Parsley and dill especially are very, very hardy as the annuals. And then the others are all perennials and they would do just fine.
All right. Kathy wants to know if introducing a ground cover to a constantly wet area would mitigate that problem.
No.
But it would look nice.
Yes. But it would look nice.
In general, the answer is plants do not solve a wet problem.
No. A little marsh marigold would be perfect.
Yeah, they're plants that will tolerate it, but they won't solve it.
Yep.
Drainage tile.
Drainage. You got to put drainage in.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to Sarah in Egremont. Sarah, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, what's your question?
I have two different fruit trees in my yard and a different question about each one. The first is a pear tree, and I've neglected to prune it. It's about 10 years old, and this year it's got a very high vertical crown and just a few other small verticals, you know, like 8 feet and down that I would nip off to. But I'm worried, especially this time of year, that it would be more than the plant could take. Yeah, what can you tell me about pruning it?
Yeah, so I wouldn't. You're a little bit late if you were going to prune it before it leafed out. I'm assuming it's leafed out now. Yes, it's leafing out.
They're just budding.
Budding, but in full flower?
Yeah, full flower.
Full flower. Yep, that's what I would thought. So personally, I would wait. You know, is it an ornamental pear or edible?
Edible.
You know, midsummer is, you know, wait till June. You could prune it then. You're not going to hurt it. The worst case, you're going to lose a little bit of fruit, you know, if it was forming fruit. And I wouldn't prune more than, 25% of the tree total removal of branches. So as long as
I'll take it in stages then.
Yeah, within stages is what I was going to say. Just, you know, you might do it this year and then next year. If it's 10 years old and hasn't had pruning, it'll probably take a few seasons to get it right, you know, a few sessions.
And a lot of commercial growers actually are doing more and more pruning of their pear trees during the summer because of a disease called fire blight.
Yep.
So they're not doing as much pruning in the spring because they get more fire blight when they do that. So midsummer is a good time to do it.
Yep.
Just make sure that it's dry and it's going to not rain within a few days after you prune it.
Yeah, and if you have more than one of them, I generally recommend sterilizing the pruners between, you know, trees at least. And if you have any kind of suspectable fungal problems like fire blight, I would sterilize the pruners between every cut. And what would I use to sterilize them?
Okay.
Rubbing alcohol in a spray bottle. You just, you know, spray the pruners after the
cut.
Easy enough. Yep. And just it helps immensely. Take it from experience. You could cause a lot of problems without doing that, especially with fruit trees.
Okay. My second fruit tree, thank you so much for the pear advice.
Yep.
The second fruit tree is a really vigorous quince bush. and it produces, you know, every other year, standard sort of thing. It has a really big year, and it produces a lot of fruit. But regardless, every year the fruit is not completely ripe by the time the frost comes. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to end up with a batch of quince that are ripe enough to eat. I've tried ripening them after picking or falling, and that's not worked out.
So when do you normally harvest them?
I wait as long as possible. So I'm harvesting them, when's the first frost? Sometimes as early as October. So I'm harvesting them October, sometime before November 1st.
Okay. Because we have a neighbor that often asks us to come and pick her quince, and they're a long season fruit in this area. We have not had as much of a problem as if some of them are ripe, which usually we will get some of them to be ripe, and usually it's about late October when we're harvesting them. And make sure that some of the ripe ones are put in with the less than ripe ones, and they will help ripen the other ones. They put off a lot of ethylene gas, which is the ripening gas. So do that. And, you know, if you will do more pruning of it, you can get rid of a little bit of that biennial bearing. By nature, they're a biennial bearing fruit. But if you balance out by pruning more, you won't get these huge crops and then nothing the next year.
Yeah, and when you do prune, I would, you know, emphasize that you're making good pruning cuts, because you can do a lot of damage by not. So there's a great website. It's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. It's free. It's called treesaregood.org. And it'll show you diagrams on making proper pruning cuts. Great illustrations.
Oh, I love that.
And this is all research-based information, so it's not opinions on how we should do this. It's facts proven through science.
Oh, marvelous.
Yep, treesaregood.org.
Thanks for taking the time with my questions. Treesaregood.org. Okay.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you so much for your expertise and time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's take one last call. We've got to make it real quick. Okay. We got Ann in Altamont. How are you? Are you there?
Hello?
Hi. Just a heads up, we got to make it quick. We're wrapping up the show, but I wanted to make sure I got to you.
Is this for Ann?
Yep, in Altamont.
Okay, yeah, I'm at this very minute planting apple trees that I got from Soil and Water, and I just want to know, I was told to, like, they're basically whipped. When I put them in, do I prune them back, like, 3 feet to the ground so they branch?
No, that actually, with a whip, you're given a blessing because it doesn't have bad structure yet. I would let it grow. Do you know if they're dwarf or semi-dwarf?
They're dwarf, I think, but maybe semi-dwarf.
All right. So if they're dwarf, I mean, in general, the idea is to let the tree grow without heading it back or cutting it back. That was actually more old way of thinking. And by doing that, you get nothing but sprouts and suckers that you have to deal with for the rest of your life. So let the tree get up to full size. If you need to make it shorter, bend the top. Don't cut it. And then if you have more questions, you can hit me up at fred@landisarboretum.org. We just don't have enough time to elaborate, but don't just cut them back. And I wouldn't cut them at all at this stage of the game.
And there's good resources online.
Yep.
Thanks, Ann. We're just about out of time here, but I want to thank everyone who called in, and I apologize to the big stack of emails in front of me that I didn't get to. So I'd like to thank our guests, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for joining us today. Support for WAMC comes from California Closets Albany, local showroom in Latham, working to create more storage space for clients this spring in their closets, garages, mudrooms, and more. CaliforniaClosets.com and the Capital District Electric Vehicle Association offering public test drives of electric vehicles Sunday, May 4th from 10 a.m. to noon at Linkwell, 2345 Maxon Road, Extension Schenectady, myeva.org. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Susie Check Eye took your calls. I'm Samantha Simmons. Tomorrow is Food Friday. Thanks, everybody.